Hey then, welcome to Making Positive Psychology Work, the weekly podcast where we uncover tested practical ways to help people move from functioning to flourishing at work, so together we can better navigate the incredible challenges and opportunities our world faces. I'm your host, Michelle McQuaid, and what you probably don't know about me is that as a child, I was sure I'd be a dancer when I grew up and loved to spend hours practicing in front of my parents' floor-to-ceiling windows, which worked as a mirror. Aww. Thank you so much for joining me for lesson number 50 of Making Positive Psychology Work. I'm so glad you're here because today we're talking to Paige Williams, a positive change solutionary who uses the science of well-being to create sustainable positive change with individuals and within organisations and at scale. A lecturer with the Centre for Positive Psychology at the University of Melbourne, Paige has completed her PhD examining change pathways, and she also consults to help organisational leaders find strategic solutions to complex challenges by creating sustainable positive changes that impact performance. But what you probably don't know about Paige is that she used to be an aerobics instructor and tells me it was leotards and leg warmers all the way. Welcome, Paige.
Thanks so much, Michelle. It's great to be with you.
It's great to be with you. And the leg warmers, I have to confess, I had quite a few of those in my own wardrobe as well as I was dancing in front of the windows.
Aren't they fabulous?
Now, Paige, last year you published a fascinating paper called Inside Out, Outside In, a Dual Approach Process Model to Developing Work Happiness. Now, this paper, I felt, had some really interesting findings about how we might improve well-being in our workplaces. So can you start by explaining the thinking behind an Inside Out, Outside In approach to well-being in workplaces for us?
I'd love to, Michelle. So prior to coming to Australia about 15 years ago, I was a senior executive in the leisure industry. I looked after hundreds of people, lots of bottom lines. And in those roles and in my work in Australia too, I've seen and experienced that change is a constant challenge for individuals, how to do it, how to sustain it, how not to lose people along the way. And for any of us involved with positive psychology, that's the invitation that we're really making to people is what kind of positive change can they make in their lives to improve their well-being, whether that might be at home or at work, whether it's life goals, career goals, any type of relationship. Change really underpins what we're engaging with. But when we look at the change literature, it's not really very nuanced about the way that it thinks about and considers change, particularly in organisational settings. So when we look at the organisational change literature, we can see that it might locate where the change is coming from, whether it's top down or bottom up. It might perhaps think about the speed at which the change is taking place, or maybe in terms of the scale, whether it's transformational change or incremental change. So when I came to do my PhD research, I was interested to think about change from a different perspective. Too often, I think organisations see the currency of change as training and development. So we want to create X change. So we'll provide X training to the individual or the team or the unit. But I knew from experience that this wasn't enough, that we had to focus change effort on the system in which the individual's team or unit was embedded. So when we go back to the change terminology, none of that really addressed the dynamic interplay between the individual and the system that they were in. And I felt that was crucial if we were going to achieve successful and sustainable change. So whilst we need to create change with the individual, inside them, if you like, in their attitudes, mindsets, feelings, behaviours, that kind of thing, to sustain and embed change, we also need to think about things outside of the individual in the system around them. And that's really how the idea around the inside out, outside in model was born. It really rethinks the way we think about change. So that it's actually the locus of change. Where is it that we're targeting the change initiative that determines whether we're taking an inside-out approach or whether we're taking an outside-in approach?
I think that's such an important question to be asking in workplaces when it comes to improving well-being, and it's hard to imagine we haven't already been asking it or asking it more fully at the very least.
I so agree.
Now, we'll be sure to put a link to your full paper in the Making It Work cheat sheet at michellemcquaid.com/podcast50. But while we're together, can you help us to understand how might workplaces leverage the factors that help us to improve from the inside out to start with? And then I want to come and talk about the outside in as well.
Sure, of course. So in my research, I was particularly interested in approaches to fostering change around happiness at work or well-being at work. And so I examined the development of employee psychological capital as an inside-out approach. And what I looked at was, what influence does that have when we intentionally develop this inside-out factor? What influence does that have on outside-in factors, things like employee perceptions of culture, of leadership, and of the system in which they're embedded? And what mechanisms might exist that join together the inside-out and outside-in factors, and that actually mean that they have a synergistic effect on each other? So I explicitly had a look at what happens with an inside-out approach, but intentionally looked at, and what influence does that have on those outside-in factors.
So, Paige, for those of us who aren't as familiar with psychological capital, can you help us understand what are those factors? But then I'm fascinated to learn, what impact did you find they had on the outside-in elements?
Well, so psychological capital brings together hope, efficacy, resilience, and optimism. And there's a great body of literature around the impact that when we bring those four things together, those four individual constructs, each of which has a body of evidence and a body of theory building behind it, but when you bring them together, they have a synergistic influence that means that the impact is greater than any one of the four on their own. So psychological capital has originally been considered a resource base for employees and for groups and teams. But with my research, I looked at it as, how could we consider PsyCap as a set of positive attitudes? And it hadn't looked at in this way before. And whilst we've got research that looks at positive attitudes towards work, I was interested in what happens if we have these more general positive attitudes at work, and if we can turn these positive attitudes on in people and kind of flick a switch, that means they are more hopeful, they feel a greater sense of efficacy, they've got more resilience and more optimism in the workplace. How does that mean that they perceive the system around them? How does it mean they perceive the culture differently? How does it mean they perceive leadership differently? Because they've got heightened skills, capacities, and positive attitudes around these four elements of PsyCap. And so what we looked at was, how is it that if we develop PsyCap, it influences perceptions of culture? And both of those things lead to a heightened feelings and experiences of work happiness.
So how did you flick the switch for building psychological capital in people that other people might be able to learn from?
In the research that we did, it actually involved a 3-day positive psychology training intervention. And that's a fairly traditional route. As you know, as I said previously, often when we think about change, training is a fairly traditional route to take to it. And certainly in the literature around PsyCap, training is one of the pathways that's been shown to be effective, not just face-to-face training, but online training as well. But I think that also there are many ways that we can develop PsyCap, things like powerful coaching conversations around how can we set goals effectively, how can we engender hope by talking about motivation towards goals and then multiple strategies to achieve them. How is it that by thinking about pathway thinking, so these strategies to achieve goals, we can embed contingency thinking so that we're building resilience and optimism for the future. So whilst we did it through a traditional route in the research that we conducted, I think there's a lot more capacity and opportunity in workplaces for PsyCap to be built through these kind of everyday coaching type conversations that leaders have the opportunity to have with their team.
I think that's so true. And one of the things I'm seeing in organisations who are investing heavily in business practices like design thinking and innovation is actually without skills like PsyCap alongside them, it's really hard technically to be able to pull off those practices. And so this opportunity to really fuse together some of the positive psychology practices we know and love with the real business needs that organisations are having. So I love that approach, that it's not just what's happening in the classroom, but it's things that are happening on the job for people every day.
And really, when we think about that, that absolutely brings together the inside-out, outside-in factors, because it may be that an organisation could use a training program as kind of a launching pad to really get these positive attitudes, which we use PsyCap, to get them turned on. But then when they're back in their workplace, an outside-in factor is what type of leadership are they exposed to in their department day-to-day? And those kind of coaching factors can be a reinforcing outside-in factor that means that those positive attitudes that have been switched on in the training are reinforced and sustained and embedded in the day-to-day workplace environment. And what we found is that when that happens, it means that people perceive the culture in which they're embedded more positively, and that in turn, in theory, could affect the way that they behave into the culture. And both those things together mean that their work happiness actually increases.
Makes perfect sense. Again, it's hard to believe we don't do it more consistently already when you describe it like that. I know in your research you also looked at how an outside-in factor like organisational virtuousness might have an impact on workplace happiness as well. What did you find?
So in terms of organisational culture, my research didn't specifically examine an outside-in approach, but there's certainly a lot of literature out there that suggests that culture has a powerful influence on employee experiences of work, and certainly a positive culture can play a critical role in fostering well-being. In terms of the framework that I used to guide the research that we did, we looked at Kim Cameron's work from the University of Michigan, and he puts forward a positive practices and strategies framework. And in the model, the inside out, outside in model, in terms of a guiding framework for outside in approaches, we used Kim's positive practices framework, which looks at communication, culture, meaning, and relationships in terms of how can an organisational be purposeful and intentional around developing organisational practices that help to build a positive culture. And then we specifically used, again, Kim's measure of organisational virtuousness to see how developing the inside-out factor of PsyCap influenced perceptions of an outside-in factor like culture. And we found that OV measure particularly useful in terms of seeing what happens when you turn these positive attitudes on.
So Paige, based on the research, when you sit down with business leaders who want to improve workplace well-being now, what are the key insights that you share with them that might help improve the way they go about this?
Sure. So there are a number of really valuable insights that I took away from it. So one thing is that around the specific training that we did, we found that people that came into the training with fairly high levels of PsyCap before day one of the training really, you know, they didn't gain as much as those people who came in with lower levels. So we need to be a bit nuanced about the expectations that we might have that everyone is going to have the same impact from the training. Everyone's going to lift by X percentage, because it really depends where people are when they come into the training as to how much they gain from it. And that's been replicated in studies across different fields, but I think it's something that we need to be mindful of in terms of building expectations around positive psychology interventions. A second thing is that understanding, and again, this supports taking an inside-out and outside-in approach, is that we found that those people that gained the most from the training, when we retested them 6 weeks later, and bear in mind, this research that we did not intentionally put in place outside-in factors as well. But those people who had gained the most, when we measured them 6 weeks later, they had also regressed the most. Mm. So we understood this to be because there wasn't an intentional outside-in strategy in place. The training had built their capacity, it had kind of broadened their horizons in terms of the opportunity that there was for positivity in the workplace. But when that wasn't fulfilled by the intentional positive practices and strategies, that really then took them back almost below their baseline at time point one. So it's almost a responsibility of an organization to think about, if we're going to build people up in a capacity on an individual and an inside-out approach, how are we going to make sure that's sustained and embedded in their experience when they go back to kind of normal day-to-day life? Because to not do that means that we may actually be creating problems that didn't exist before we try to do this well-intentioned well-being intervention.
I think that makes so much sense, and such important cautions for all of us as we're introducing these practices in organisations and helping the workplace to do the same. So if a leader's sitting there going, okay, I get that, you know, I understand both of those, thanks so much for telling me up front, how do you help them then plan for success around those elements?
So I think it's about understanding where are there opportunities that currently exist in the organisation for us to kind of insert sustainable practice in terms of sustaining well-being. And what I mean by that is maybe there are already organisational practices that go on that if we tweak it by 20%, if we add in a strengths-based question, if we restructure those weekly staff meetings so that there is coaching around PSYCAP-based questions for the team or for individuals, how is it that we can take time and structures that are already in place and make them appropriate to support the individual development that's going on in support of well-being? And in my research, that was PSYCAP. So how is it that we can embed things at the team level, at the one-on-one interaction between the leader and the team member? How is it we can embed in those things that are already happening, elements that will support PSYCAP that's been turned on by the training?
So in addition to training the staff, perhaps around PSYCAP, do you see benefit in training managers about how to be leaders who bring out PSYCAP in their people? Or are you seeing these more as kind of everyday prompts or nudges within the environment of how a leader's already working, or both, or something different?
I think ideally, Michelle, it's both. Mm-hmm. I think ideally what we need to do is to provide as many opportunities as possible for this reinforcement and for people to be given the opportunity to demonstrate and reinforce the positive training that they've been given. Now, some leaders may need some specific training around how to do that. I think the important thing is, though, is to break down the barriers in terms of organisations thinking we can't add any more in. And I think very often it's not about adding more in, it's about changing the flavour of what's already there.
I think that's so true. So given we're just starting to scratch the surface of how this interplay between inside out and outside in might actually work when it comes to improving well-being in organisations, what next are you hoping to figure out when it comes to your own research?
So it would be wonderful if we could test an outside-in approach and see how that compares in terms of what happens if we start making changes at the organisational level and let that trickle down to influence positive attitudes from the inside out and see what influence that has. I think there's lots of nuances to thinking about. How do we phase an inside-out, outside-in approach? Is there one way that we start with one and then move to another that's more effective than the other? The other thing that we're doing this is taking these principles and applying them at the systems level, a big piece of new direction in research at the Centre for Positive Psychology that I'm involved with is positive system science. So again, thinking about this not from an individual organisation level, but thinking about embedded systems right up to large scale systems. What does it mean if we take inside out, outside in, and just apply it from inside one system and then outside in terms of the larger system, so kind of like a Russian dolls scenario, scaling it up that way. And the other thing that I'm really fascinated in at the moment is how is it that positive psychology and the theories around positive psychology actually explain the engine room for change in organisations. We've got so many deficit-based models and processes around organisational change, and I think that some of our positive psychology theories actually explain to us where the momentum, motivation and energy for successful change is. So I'm looking to build a positive change theory that organisations can use in a very flexible way to achieve successful and sustainable change.
Again, I think that's so needed. One of the things I find most dismaying about most of the change research to date is it doesn't consider how our brains are wired to work at their best. I mean, why would you? You're only trying to change human behaviour. So I completely agree that there is lots there that positive psychology could add into the mix. And I think that research would be highly valued by all of us around the world. Paige, are you ready for the lightning round?
I sure am, Michelle.
So if we take positive change overall as a given, I'm wondering what's been the most useful positive psychology insight tool or learning you've applied in your own life and why?
So I know that I'm with you on this one, Michelle. I'm a big, big fan of appreciative inquiry. Mm-hmm. And two principles from appreciative inquiry have really stuck with me. The first one is what we focus on grows. And the second one is that the questions we ask are fateful in that they take us in a direction and they drive our behaviour. And so I have come to really understand the power of positive questions and how they can create such a potent shift in direction and mindset. And I use that with my family, and I use that with my clients, and I use that with myself in a really intentional and purposeful way now.
I think it's a great practice to have. And Paige, there was a book in particular you'd recommend of all of your readings about when it comes to bringing out the best in people in workplaces. What would it be?
I really enjoyed reading Being Wrong by Catherine Schultz. She paints a really rich picture of the value of error in our lives and the way it supports us in so many ways, from understanding our self-concept to our thinking about optimism to the way it actually is the basis for the idiosyncrasies that make us individual. And I think it has such relevance for PP as a field, in that we need to be much more pragmatic about what we say we can do. You know, positive psychology works for some of the people some of the time. And I think it's so relevant to growth and change. You know, really being wrong is about understanding how we can learn and grow. And I believe that's how we bring out the best in people.
I haven't read that one, but I'm going to add it to my reading list. Sounds like something I would enjoy greatly. So what are you reading right now, and are you enjoying it?
At the moment, I'm reading a fascinating book edited by Ed Diener, which is Positive Psychology of Social Change. And it looks at a variety of ways in which positive psychology can take a role in this kind of big system change, and some of the successful research and evidence and interventions that have been done. And it's really getting me thinking around, you know, the big systems and how POSSITE can play a role in really helping us create a better world, but at that larger scale.
Sounds amazing as well. So we'll put all of this in the show notes for people from today. And lastly, Paige, if there was one thing you wished everybody thought about when it comes to bringing out the best in themselves and others in workplaces, what would it be?
Oh, it's got to be inside out, outside in. So whether you're thinking about change for yourself or for others, think about, what do I need to change about me or that individual or group or team? And then how can I embed factors in the system around them, in the context around them, to help them support that change and to help them sustain and grow that change over time? Because that's how it's going to be, that's how it's going to stick, and that's how we're going to see long-term benefits.
Paige, thank you so much for joining us today.
That's a pleasure. Thank you, Michelle.
And thank you for listening. For more information on Paige's wonderful work, be sure to check out her LinkedIn profile at Paige Williams, where you can also access her fascinating research papers. And as always, we'll put all the URLs we've been chatting about into the show notes for you. You've been listening to Making Positive Psychology Work with Michelle McQuaid. To grab your special Making It Work cheat sheet from Paige's podcast and some of the tested practical ways you can help apply her ideas in workplaces, simply visit michellemcquaid.com/podcast50. That's michellemcquaid.com/podcast50. And if you'd like to perform a random act of kindness today, then share this podcast with a friend or colleague to help improve our workplaces. After all, as Tina Fey wisely said, there are no mistakes, only opportunities. Until next time, take care.